Welcome to the first of what may be a series, may not be a series. It's Martin and Ruthie's Plague Cast.
I like the quarantine sessions.
Yes, the quarantine sessions. That's a good one. Yeah, that's better. Well, we thought long and hard about what we should call this brand new unofficial podcast.
And Dad thought long and hard, and I just came in with just the perfect title.
It's Ruthie and Dad, the Quarantine Sessions.
Because I think that makes her sound like a group of sort of nomadic musicians.
Yes, well, it does, the Quarantine Session. It makes it sound like it's a sort of bootleg Bob Dylan album, which it isn't really, although we will hear a little bit of Bob Dylan a little bit later on when we compare music choices. First of all, though, you're locked down with your mum and dad. Not ideal for
a dream situation. From a young age, all a 19-year-old ever wants is to
end up stuck at home with your mum and dad.
Yeah.
But you know, people are dying, as we know.
And as they always are.
As they always are, this is true, but, you know, in greater numbers.
Yeah.
And one of your friends said to you the other day, do you know anyone?
Just absolutely no context, we hadn't spoken in a couple of days, she just messages me saying, anyone who's dead yet?
And because, I mean, I don't know anybody personally who's died. Obviously, I see all the stories in the papers. But the figures are going, we had a bit of a discussion about how the government's handling it. My view is not particularly brilliantly. Your view is that we made loads and loads of mistakes.
I think we could have done way better, yeah. Also, I just think Boris Johnson is just not a great leader.
No, he's not.
I don't think he's like spawn of the devil, has purposely wants people to die for economic benefits or anything like that. Like, I don't think he's Hitler incarnate, but I do think he's a poor leader. I don't think he's a great government official. I also don't think he's massively responsible or reliable. And like, you can look at sort of things that his professors said about him when he was at Oxford. He was Oxford, not Cambridge, wasn't he?
Think he was Oxford, yeah.
Yeah, he was Oxford because he was in that Bullingdon club. But things they said about him when he was at Eton, I don't think he has the attention to detail for this kind of work.
No, it's absolutely true that he doesn't have the attention. I mean, that's not his strength, is it? Attention to detail.
No.
And maybe we could have been locked down.
And sort of like pragmatic, kind of sit down and deal with it and make decisions. Leader, I don't think that is him at all.
No, maybe not his strength. But we, you know, my view, and we had a bit of an argument about this, sort of off mic, was, you know, before we, in the warm-up sessions, we had a bit of an argument. And I think that the UK is completely...
maddening degree.
Yes, but I think the UK is a special case. I can see why we've done worse than the...
You think it's a special case when we talk about colonisation and stuff?
Well, I think we were a more benign colonialists than the French or the Belgians.
Killing some people is still killing a lot of people.
Yes, but we're not arguing about colonialism at the moment. What I'm saying is London is a very, very... And probably a lot of it goes back to our colonial past, you know, is a hugely popular city for people to come to from all over the world. And also there's a lot of people, 10, 11 million people or whatever, living together in very, very close circumstances, whereas
maybe if we'd have invested in infrastructure the way that Scandinavian countries have, that wouldn't be the case.
It's a lot harder here than it is in Scandinavia, in that, you know, you look at the death figures.
Only now it's so bad, but like, we should have the potential of having the ability to have dealt with this better.
Yeah, possibly. I know what you mean. One of the problems we not really face is that our hospital system hasn't broken down in the way that the Italian hospital system did. And that, you could say, is management of the pandemic, you know, over here. We've sort of flattened the curve a wee bit, so the hospitals have been able to cope. But I think, obviously, huge mistakes, a lack of testing, lack of personal protective equipment for people who work in hospitals and care homes and all that. So I'm not 100% gung-ho for the UK, but I will say that I don't think that it's quite fair, as Twitter has, you know, these huge threads on Twitter and said, oh, look at the Germans, look at the Swedes, look at the New Zealanders, look at the Taiwanese, they did way better than us. It's probably slightly unfair criticism, but
no one's saying that the Swedish did any better. They've gone for full head herd immunity. They're being criticised massively.
Yes, they have, true. Well, the Danish then.
Yeah, the Danish.
It's the same.
Unbelievable. Not all the Scandinavian countries are actually the same. Who knew?
Who knew?
But as we've had that preamble, welcome.
Welcome, yes. Did we not say welcome? Welcome to...
I don't think so, not really.
Welcome to the quarantine sessions. In terms of being locked up with your mum and dad, and there's obviously going to be a point where we're able to go out and about again, not necessarily me, but younger people.
But even so, I think that the thing that they've said is that it will be, if they allow younger people, it'll be younger people who don't live with older people. So you're really shooting me in the foot there, Dad.
Yes, I'm afraid not so much in the foot. But yeah, no, it's a good point. Do you remember, Ruth, the weeks just before you went to the University of York, when you suddenly decided you didn't
want to... Feels so long ago.
It does feel a long time ago, because you decided you didn't... You had a real wobble. You sent myself and your mother an email saying you really weren't sure you wanted to go to university. And you were wobbly about it, but you decided eventually that you would go to university. And it's changed your life in many ways, hasn't it? I mean, you've become much more independent. Your capacity for alcohol has increased exponentially.
Tenfold.
Yes.
Although I'm really worried because I'm going to have lost all my... No, I'm really actually quite worried because I'm going to get back. I'm going to either get back to university and start going out again, and just will have lost all my talents for being able to drink copious amounts.
Yeah, well,
I'm gonna be back to square one.
I don't think alcohol works like that.
It does. It does. You do. You build up a tolerance, and then you don't drink for a while, and then your tolerance goes down.
Have you not thought of maybe drinking a bit while you're at home? I'm surprised you've not been. But
oh, I just thought I'd just not bother for a while. I think I will probably start soon.
I think
they're becoming more and more annoying. So.
Yeah, I think the medical advice is that staying off alcohol for a little while, giving your liver a bit of a holiday. Your liver's jumping up and down with joy, you know, having that.
The
holiday.
Loving life.
Yeah,
having. Do you have two livers?
No, you just have one liver.
Two kidneys,
yeah. One liver. What a fine meal that is. Now, I think it'll actually do you good. Not drinking.
Well,
so
I haven't drank anything. Well, since I've broke up from uni.
Yeah. How are you filling your time? I know one of the ways you're filling your time is...
Trashy TV.
Yes. Well, not even trashy TV, just sort of, you know, nondescript TV, because you went right through...
I like to keep that real middle of the road, just...
Yeah, because you watched, you know, you're not watching
things... I think
you
would respect me more if I was like, I'm going to watch every single different series of Desperate Housewives and just fully commit to kind of trash, but...
Because you've not been watching things like Too Hot to Handle and those
saw that on the Netflix home screen, or have you heard about it?
No, I've heard about Too Hot to Handle.
I hadn't really heard of it until one of my friends just mentioned it.
There's a couple, isn't there? There's Too Hot to Handle. That's the one where
they're not allowed to touch each other. I've never watched it. I've not really even heard that much about it.
No, well, the idea is that these are all sort of hot Love Island type people, but even though they're all so hot...
They've got to get to know each other.
Yes, this is going to look inside the... So they're going to form relationships based on
It's the same as Love is Blind. It's the same premise, really.
Yes.
Because they have to get to know each other from behind the wall.
But you haven't been watching those programmes,
have you? I've watched Love is Blind ages before this whole quarantine thing.
Yeah.
I've been watching Made in Chelsea.
Yes, but as well as watching
Made in Chelsea... I watched a lot of How I Met Your Mother.
A lot.
Because it's comforting.
There's 27 seasons of that. And you watched it, you know, and there's 50 episodes and everything. You watched every single one.
The thing is with it is great background television. I like it to be on in the background.
It's a bizarre
I don't have to concentrate on it.
TV on.
And I like to I can fall asleep to it. I'm not worried that I'm going to miss anything. There's no pressure to it. Everyone's already seen it. Everyone agrees that it's just like fine, pretty bad, pretty misogynistic. But
is it?
Well, not really. It has a lot of the tropes of like the cool girl trope. If you've read Gone Girl, you know the whole Gillian Flynn
thing. I've read Gone Girl, so I know the whole Gillian Flynn thing.
Well,
what's that got to do with How I Met Your Mother?
Okay, so in her Cool Girl monologue, do you remember that from reading it?
Vaguely.
When she's like, the cool girl eats pizza and stays a size 2. The cool, you know, that the whole reason she's never been able to be herself Gillian Flynn coined this term called the cool girl, which is this trope that you see in loads of films. So, like, Mila Kunis's character in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, Kate Hudson's character in How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Eighth grade? Anybody in eighth grade? Is that a certain
No. Eighth grade is a genuine thing. The character, Sam in Garden State, the character played by Natalie Portman, she's like a cool girl. Mila Kunis, again, in Black Swan. Mila Kunis in Friends with Benefits.
But not
Mila Kunis in basically any film ever.
Yeah, but not Mila Kunis in Family Guy.
No.
She's very much the uncool girl.
And so it's this persona that a lot of mainly male writers will write these women who are effortlessly attractive, but eat all the time. They're usually typically into male things, so sports or drinking scotch, which is like Robin, the character from How I Met Your Mother. Or
right, so
I'm trying
Robin
to think of a
character
that you'll know.
What's
Kate Hudson's character in Almost Famous?
Not so.
Do you remember
yet.
Her?
Well, you remember
that?
All these films, don't you?
Oh, I'm trying to think of a cool girl character that you will have actually seen.
Well, I saw Lady Bird. Is there a cool girl in Lady
no.
Bird? No.
No, because that's well written and by a woman.
It's
usually male
right.
writers. Have you seen? Have you? There's Something About Mary.
Yes.
Mary is the character that Gillian Flynn based. Gone Girl, I've forgotten the name of the character.
No, I've forgotten the name, yeah.
Base, the character on, the Cameron Diaz character in that. It's this male fantasy woman who can never really exist, but women try and make up. So you know, in Bridesmaids, you know when she pretends to be cool, I'm saying cool in inverted commas, that was it's audio.
you're such a professional.
Just professionalism coming out the wazoo.
Coming
I've not said
wazoo.
Coming out of the wazoo for a while.
What's coming out of the wazoo?
That's the saying.
Is it? I've never heard coming out of the wazoo. That just means from nowhere.
Just coming out of all everywhere.
Okay, fair enough.
I forgot what I was saying now.
Well, something was coming out of the wazoo, and I don't know what exactly.
Professionalism.
What was...
I was saying, so the cool girl, and I was saying cool in inverted commas, and now I've forgotten.
Well, no, I think we've covered that, basically, cool girls. Because I was referring...
Oh, so Ted projects this thing. The character of Robin, which is the main, the central love interest for a lot of it, is this woman who is completely unattainable. And Bridesmaids, I was saying, for you to understand, you know when she pretends to have just woken up like this and she's totally cool about not having a relationship, whatever, the Kristen Wiig character, when really she's not, she's pretending to be the cool girl that you see in all these films.
Yeah.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is like that character as well.
This has been a sort of a little journey around cinema history in many ways.
There you go.
But I've probably watched too many of those films that are a bit
come
more...
Come for the jerks, stay for the cinema history.
Yes, I've seen too many of those films. The three films that I'm referring to were...
Barbra Streisand. There's a Barbra Streisand film where she's the cool girl. I've forgotten what the film is.
Wow. Well, it's not Yentl, and it's not... Is it Funny Girl? About Fanny Brass?
I don't think it's... Not Funny Girl.
Barbra Streisand, I mean, she's older
anyway,
than me.
Anyway, but what it does is it glorifies sort of conventionally male attributes,
right.
So being into cars.
So, why have you watched 200 episodes of it over the last...
Because it's comforting, because it's nice to have on in the background. And as much as I think you want to watch stuff that's improving or intellectual or critically acclaimed, what is really nice to do is just have something where you don't need to think about it.
So we had all that. We had How I Met Your Mother. We had a certain amount of Grey's Anatomy.
Not much Grey's Anatomy.
No.
You've
had it.
The other day I watched like 20 minutes of the newest episode and I thought, no, I actually cannot watch this. Yeah. It is pure trash.
The problem is with these American series.
Now I'm on Gilmore Girls.
Yes, I know. And I didn't realise there were so many episodes, episode after episode after episode. And I said, well, why don't you watch, if you like that, watch The Marvellous Mrs. Maisel? Because there's the same people who did Gilmore Girls. I've done The Marvellous Mrs. Maisel. I thought the first series was great. But like all these things, it jumps the shark. The Americans always make too many. You know, Fawlty Towers.
We've done that with Killing Eve now.
Yes, Killing Eve's jumped the shark, hasn't it? Onto the.
I watched the first series, loved it. Watched the second series, thought meh, not. It was good. It was, you know, you could watch it. I wasn't bored while I was watching it, but not brilliant. Thought, yeah, that's a good ending. And then they've brought it back for a third season.
Yeah.
Madness.
Absolute madness. I worry during these troubled times, these unprecedented times, for young people like yourself, all right, you maybe miss a year of your life if it's as bad as it might be. You know,
a year is a really long time, though.
A year's quite a long time in the 19. But yeah. Then you're back again, and hopefully at some point, you know, the new normal, whatever the new normal is, it'll be... There will
I
be
hope
bars
it's a lot like the old normal.
Well, I would hope so as well.
I liked the old normal.
Yeah, the old normal was fine. Nobody was looking for a new normal.
No.
But, and hopefully some of those bars and things that you like to go to in York, they'll still be open if they've been lucky enough to survive.
One of them have put a club that I go to a lot in York has put a purse that's like Freedom Party, I think it's called, or something, date to be confirmed. Yeah. Like, there are plans in the pipeline.
There are plans, and you know, fingers crossed it's all going to. And you lose a little bit of your, lose a little bit of your life. You've lost a summer and all that. But obviously, there'll be people third years who've graduated.
Oh, I don't envy them at all.
And they're in a really, you know, because those graduate jobs that they were hoping to get. I mean, for a start, they don't get the celebrations of graduation, everything, which is a sort of rite of passage. But then those graduate jobs that they were looking for, a lot of those will have disappeared. I'm just thinking about my own industry, you know, the media. Well, I'm a very tiny, tiny little... I'm a tiny, 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 tiny little part of the media industry. But when I see newspapers and my own radio show and listen to the sort of lack of advertising, if you like, those, they're not going to be hiring. You know, normally a smart graduate could have expected to get a job in the media somewhere, but they're not going to...
I don't know how many anymore. The media's kind of been a dying industry for
Well,
a while.
It has been, you know, newspapers have been dying.
Traditional media.
Well, traditional media. But what everybody still needs, you know, is content.
Content, yeah.
Everybody needs content. So those...
You've said this before. Much like some children are told bedtime stories, you just whispered to me, we still need content.
Yes, when I was, that's probably when I was trying to persuade you to be a journalist of some sort. But, you know, so everybody still needs content, whether it's on the internet or it's a satellite TV or whatever. And you would have thought these third years would be the type of people who, to quote Stuart Lee, would be content providers somewhere or other. But those jobs are going to go because simply because the advertising hasn't been there. Nobody's, apart from supermarkets, nobody's really advertising. And then the jobs that graduates...
No one's spending any money.
No, precisely. And the jobs that graduates might have done while they were waiting for a post in the media, i.e. working in bars and clubs and restaurants and coffee bars, those are going to go as well.
Yeah, I mean, I can see on a very small scale, and obviously not to the degree that you can really understand it, because, like, in terms of losing jobs, like, people will have lost, like, their only way to earn money. They will be struggling to feed their family, or, like, there will be graduates who are not in a position where they can go home and their parents can help them out, like I am in that. Or people who are in their years of university and rely on having the summer to make money to fund their next year of university. Like, I know there's going to be a lot of people in that. And I'm not all. But even I can see, like, I've had the job that we've done that I get paid for is now gone. And that's not... And that's even to me a bit of like, oh, gosh, so next year I'm going to have to figure out what to work during...
No, I think, no, like, I think the way you think is, oh, gosh, I'm going to have to talk to my dad now and not for money.
No, I mean that too. But it's also a thing of like, and I had another writing job, and that's been postponed at least
indefinitely paused
for how long, you don't know. Yeah. And so then you do start to think, like, I really have relied on having that money to not have to ask you, like, which is a nice position to be in. And I also know I have parents to fall back on, which is a massively privileged position. But in terms of a lot of university students, they can't fund the loan is not big enough to for most people. Like, it was not for me. The loan is not big enough to cover rent plus all your living expenses. And a lot of these jobs have gone, and like, most people save loads in the summer to then have money to be able to live in the term time and stuff. And so It is. I think it has probably more knock-on effects for graduates and people who are in university than you probably even imagine, because you kind of think, oh no, graduation, postgraduate jobs, or they're not having their exams, blah, blah, blah. But I think really it has bigger, like, the economic stuff around it is much bigger.
And it's difficult
than you think you can even see, really.
And it's difficult for graduates to moan about it, because they can see how it's affecting all sorts of other people. You know, I don't know, self-employed people,
again,
my hairdresser, I don't think he's going to open up again. Dentists.
Loads of people will lose their jobs as well.
People lose their businesses and that sort of thing.
And people who have lots of children. So you are, again, as a university student or as someone who's in their third year graduating, you are, again, in a really privileged position. But it doesn't make
it... No, it doesn't make it any better.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the important things, is like people will complain about like losing their summer holidays. And of course you can say, well, carers are going to lose their lives because they've not been given the proper protective equipment, or people will starve to death, which always happens when unemployment rises. But it still does hurt to feel cheated by something.
Let's lighten it up now, if you can call Bob Dylan singing about the assassination of President Kennedy is lightening it up, because this is my choice of music. Murder Most Foul, Bob Dylan.
Rub-a-dub-dub, it's a murder most foul. Hush, little children, you'll understand. The Beatles are coming, they're gonna hold your hand. Slide down the banister, go get your coat. Ferry across the Mersey and go for the throat.
Wow, that was great.
We edit the music in later, just in case you've missed that cracking joke from Ruth there. It's interesting, because we were having this conversation about how...
This is the low-budget version of the show.
Just
saying something.
We were having this conversation about the fact that your view was, if you can't say...
You can't say it in 3 minutes, you can't say it all.
No, well, Bob Dylan's track is 17 minutes long. But I started off thinking, well, this is a bit... You know, it's very much like... Well, you won't have heard of McGonagall, who's the worst poet. He's a sort of...
I have heard of
joke.
McGonagall when you... did this bit last time we tried to record this.
Yes, you're right. But apart from that, McGonagall, you know, did stuff like, you know, 'twas in the year of 1843 when we went down to the river, you and me, sort of really corny rhymes. And the start of the Bob Dylan thing sounded as though it was going to be like that. But then he goes into a whole 60s bit. And the bit we played for you there, as you'll have noticed, he actually mentions the Beatles in that bit, because America, it was an interesting sort of little take on it, but America in 1963, when November 22nd, when President Kennedy was shot, you know, the whole country was in real shock then. I mean, really low. And then about a month or two after that, the Beatles arrived in America. And one of the reasons that the Beatles became so massive in America was the fact that America was looking for something to lift them out of the gloom, you know, after President Kennedy's assassination. Bob Dylan refers to that, and they refers to all sorts of... There's all sorts of interesting cultural references. I expanded my Spotify playlist by about 5 tunes that Dylan mentions in Murder Most Foul. So even though you're only like a 3-minute piece, you do love Bob, and I would
recommend... Do like more than 3 minutes. Yeah. I was just doing a bit.
You're just doing a bit. But I would, if I were you, I would listen to the whole 17 minutes. You know, what? Sometime when you think, I'll switch on the Gilmore Girls. Or sorry, Gilmore Girls. I'll switch on Gilmore.
That is by far the most annoying thing that you and Mum do. It's calling everything, oh, are you doing the Zoom? It's not the Zoom. It's just Zoom.
Well, I always say, just one bit of advice for you. Take away the, just call it Facebook. It's much cooler.
Yeah, you see, you didn't deliver that very well.
So, instead of watching Gilmore Girls, each episode, which, given commercials and things, is probably about 17 minutes.
No, they're like 40 minutes long.
Oh, are they?
Or like 30.
Yeah, well, half of Gilmore Girls. Instead of that, listen to Bob Dylan, because I'd be interested in your view.
Yeah, I will do.
What have you got for us?
I've got a song called Come Through by Jeremy Zucker.
Now I'm shaking, drinking all this coffee. These last few weeks have been exhausting. I'm lost in my imagination. And there's one thing that I need from you. Can you come through?
That was great. Actually, I have heard it and I quite liked it because I downloaded it.
Yeah, but, nice, serene.
Do we know anything about Jeremy Zucker at all?
He is like 24 years old from America. Nothing really that interesting. No. The title is all in lowercase letters because capitals are out.
Yep.
Didn't know whether you knew that.
Yes, yes.
Capital letters are completely just not cool anymore. But yeah, it's nice.
Yeah.
So just a little piece of music for you.
Excellent.
And those will both be on our Spotify playlist.
They will, unlike some other tunes. We went through the Spotify play because I actually listened to the last podcast we did on Spotify.
Songs not on the Spotify playlist.
There's a couple, two or three that aren't on there over the years. Mm-hmm. But I don't worry about it. There's only about 100 and odd people following our playlist on
That's
Spotify.
That's quite a lot, though, for Spotify. You don't really get very many followers on Spotify.
Yeah, well, there's only about...
some people do.
Yeah, well, there's only about 6 people following my actual personal playlist.
That's quite a lot.
Is it?
Yeah, there's only like 2 following.
Really? Mm-hmm. Well, if people want to do listen to the tunes, Jeremy Zucker and Bob Dylan, how would they just go on to Spotify?
How would they do that? Let me tell you.
Go on then.
If you just type in Ruthie, Uni Dad and Me, or Ruthie, Me and My Dad, or Martin and Ruth, or Martin and Ruth podcast, or any of those things,
you'll find it pretty easily.
You'll find our profile and then our playlist. Mm.
And if you want to email us, I did mention last time when we recorded this that we were back by popular demand. Because
we're using the term popular loosely.
We are indeed. And I said we'd had lots and lots of emails.
Again, using the term lots loosely.
Lots and lots of emails asking us to come back and do a plague cast or quarantine sessions. We had lots and lots of emails, by which I mean 4. So, and also my chum Nick Harris, he wanted us to do it again because he's got a daughter the same age. So they have a lot of the similar sort of conversations. But I did notice how your musical taste sort of changed. Because the first week when we were going to do this and I asked you for a piece of music, you chose something different. Ghosts See Kids. Is it Kids See Ghosts? There you go.
That was good as well, though, wasn't it?
Hmm.
It's Kanye West and Kid Cudi.
With his great big smile, and you'll find that even a kid is caught swimming in a later style. Oh, what is Santa bringing?
It feels so good, it should cost. Brought an alligator, I ain't talking Lacoste. Made me say, like a mix of Master P and Rick Ross. She seemed to make me always feel like a boss.
Yeah, and it's called Fourth Dimension. And I liked it because it had a bit of oldie worldie music at the start. I like those sort of rap hip hop things
like a good sample, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, because
you like that Chancers song by Subculture Surge that I did ages ago.
Which, of course, is Johnny Mathis going from way back. That's good, and it's on our Spotify playlist as well. And the other thing, just to finish this off, that you've been doing loads of is jigsaws. You've become a jigsaw maniac. Gilmore Girls in the background. You are good at jigsaws.
I am. And some can sing, some can dance.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to be able to turn it into a career.
What, doing jigsaws?
Checking the jigsaws.
Well, now...
Someone's got to check the jigsaws, Dad.
Yeah, well, interesting you'd say that, because I interviewed on the radio a woman that is her career. She makes jigsaws. She chooses the pictures. The company send them to her. She lives in Gloucestershire. They send these pictures to her home in Gloucestershire. She decides which are the ones from like hundreds of pictures that would make a good jigsaw, and then draws a design of how the pieces should be.
You see, I don't want to do that.
Yeah,
I want to like actually.
There's a computer program,
jigsaws.
I think. It's a thousand pieces. And is it true that you're now seeing the world
in little puzzle pieces? Everything.
Yeah.
Can see how it all fits together.
Mm. Well,
the one I'm doing at the moment is so hard.
I know.
It's a 1,500 piece one, and it's all like such similar colours.
Yeah.
And you, every time you come in, I'm like, oh, it's so annoying.
I know.
Like,
why
just don't do it.
Why do you carry on doing it? It's so annoying. Yeah.
Because I'm 19 and I'm wild and that's what you've got to do. Sad times.
Sad times indeed. Well, let's hope we can do another podcast next week if there's any evidence that people actually have any appetite for it, because that was the other thing that we said.
Bored of listening to everyone's take on what it's like to live in quarantine, podcasts about quarantine. If you want a good set of podcasts with a big back catalogue, listen to This American Life.
I knew you were going to say that, yeah. But like I say, every idiot is doing podcasts these days. So, but if there seems to be some sort of appetite, how many emails would I need to as evidence that there's some
Double
sort of
figures.
Appetite? Right.
Which I think is unlikely.
Okie doke. martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. If you want another one of these plague casts, the quarantine sessions, let us know and we'll gladly in my case, not so gladly in Ruth's case, put it out there for you. Meanwhile, thank you very much indeed for listening.
Stay safe.